I've discovered that when you're a parent, you have to be prepared to field existential questions pretty early on. Like, why is there poison ivy? The real question, of course, is an indignant one. Why should there be something in the world that seems to exist only in order to make our lives miserable? It's a question that places humans in the center of the universe and all of the responsibility on the plant for its own malevolent existence, or maybe on God or whatever it was that created such a hostile being as poison ivy to begin with. But of course, it's the wrong question, because from my perspective, at least, plants don't only exist in relation to human beings. They have their own existence in their own right, and they are there for their own reasons that have nothing to do with us. A better question might be, why are humans allergic to this kind of ivy? This ivy that we call poison ivy actually isn't doing anything. It's just sitting there, minding its own business, and we are the ones who have to go along and touch it and have our reaction and get all upset about it. It turns out that the chemicals in the oil of the leaves are actually not poisonous at all. If it weren't for our own histamine freakout, they would be completely harmless. So now this is where it gets very kind of Buddhist and even a little bit New Agey, because it raises the question of whether anything really out there actually makes us happy or unhappy, or whether it's really all always just about our own reaction to things. But I didn't go into all of that when my kids asked me this question a few years ago. I just explained that every plant and every animal has its own way of protecting itself. Poison ivy has oil on its leaves that make you itch when you touch it, and so people try not to touch it and the plant stays safe. This prompted a flurry of follow-up questions over the next few years. What do deer have to protect themselves? What do cockroaches have to protect themselves? What do whales have to protect themselves? What does grass have to protect itself? It's been fun to talk about fish that taste really bad, and turtle shells, and cheetahs that run fast, and starfish that have arms that regenerate if they get cut off. And then they asked the mother of all questions, what do we have to protect ourselves? They meant, what do humans have? And that was the question that I answered. But as a mother, I couldn't help but also hear, what do we children have to protect ourselves? The world is so big and so scary sometimes, and we don't have a shell, and we can't run that fast, and our arms and legs won't grow back. What do we have to protect ourselves? This is a question that I'll come back to later. But I explained to them that we humans have our brains. We are the smartest animal. And so we have figured out how to build shelters that keep us dry in the rain, and heaters and fires that keep us warm in the cold. We can invent weapons to protect ourselves from something attacking us. We can't run fast, but we can invent cars that do. We can't fly, but we can invent airplanes that do. We can't grow an arm back like a starfish, but we can invent medicines to cure diseases and even create artificial arms that work. And so even though our bodies really aren't that great compared to other animals in the wild, our brains have allowed us to survive better than almost any other creature on Earth. We humans and the things that we've created and the animals that we raise for food have taken over the entire planet. Humans have been given our brains to protect ourselves, and it's really the only thing we have. What I didn't tell my kids at that moment is that this very thing that we have deployed to protect ourselves is the very thing that's causing us the greatest risk right now. Our industries, our technological advances, all the ways that we have harnessed nature for our benefit and protected ourselves against nature are now taxing the interdependent web of the earth to the tipping point. And if we go over that tipping point, it could create such an ecological avalanche that not all our best brains, not all the king's horses and all the king's men would be able to do anything about it. I won't go over with you again the kind of humanitarian disasters that would ensue. Because the weird thing is we all know this already. There may be some people in this country right now who are actually in denial, but for the most part, we know it with our brains. We know it. Many of us participated in the Science March yesterday and celebrated our extraordinary human brains and our capacity to understand our world and the complexities of biology and chemistry and physics. We celebrated the wonderful things that we have been able to achieve through science and the human problems that we have been able to solve. But our brains, for all their miraculous power, are limited. Our brains have evolved to protect ourselves from certain kinds of dangers only. Immediate dangers, felt dangers, the danger of walking too near the edge of a cliff, the danger of a saber-toothed tiger approaching, the danger of cold weather if we don't have shelter. And when we experience such danger, we will deploy the full brilliance of our brains and bodies to escape it. And when we see a child in such danger, we will go to great lengths of heroism and sacrifice to save that child. The dangers that we face today, however, for the first time ever, are not those kinds of dangers. Global warming, fresh water shortages, loss of biodiversity, bee colony collapses. For many of us in this room, these are abstract dangers. Some of us were affected by Hurricane Sandy. I know at least one had their home destroyed, but for the most part, these are not personal threats to us, and they will not be in our lifetime. The adults here will pretty much be okay. I was talking with a 66-year-old hippie artist recently who was telling me that he thinks his age, 66, is the perfect age to be right now. Because he said, look, you got to live through the 60s and 70s, which were awesome, and then you get to die before things get really bad. To me, he said, global warming is just more spring days. And so while our brains may know the danger, we don't feel the danger for ourselves or for others. We don't feel that fear of the saber-toothed tiger approaching. We don't have that fight or flight response. We don't see the face of the child who will become a refugee because of a deadly drought in her land. We don't have a chance to be a hero with a cape who can swoop in and save her. Instead, we're more like an MTA subway driver. We're being told over a crackly intercom that there may be a child on the tracks a mile ahead. And we're being told to slam on the brakes right now. We may very well believe that it's true, but, you know, we're being told lots of things. Our brains have evolved to help a child that we can see, not a child somewhere down the track. But if we wait until we can see the face of that child, we can slam on the emergency brakes, but it will be too late. There are children in our world who know that they are on the tracks, and they are desperately trying to show us their faces now. They're the children who are seeing their homes flooded in southern Louisiana. They're urban children who are suffering asthma at epidemic rates now because of air pollution. They are Alaskan indigenous children who are having to evacuate their ancestral homes because the ice is literally melting out from beneath their feet. They are the children in Syria who find themselves in the midst of mass migration and war because of drought. They are the children with the wisdom to look into their future and see that they are the ones who are going to be paying the price for the actions of the adults long after those adults are gone. One group of these children and youth have banded together with the help of an adult attorney and have actually filed a lawsuit against the federal government for doing too much to contribute to climate change and too little to stop it. To me, it's an incredibly inspiring story. The group is called Our Children's Trust, and their suit claims that, quote, through the government's actions in causing climate change, it has violated the youngest generation's constitutional right to life, liberty, property, as well as failed to protect essential public trust resources. The children are the plaintiffs here, in this case, as well as one adult who is a plaintiff on behalf of his granddaughter. The federal government and the fossil fuel industry have moved to dismiss the case, but just this fall, a U.S. district judge denied their motion. So this case, which started... So this case is actually moving forward now and gaining momentum. What the adults are doing in this case, the attorney, the grandfather, and others, is acting as allies to the children. The concept of being an ally is used a lot in progressive movements these days to describe someone who is not directly impacted by a particular form of oppression, but who's working with and for people who are. So, for example, a straight person who will not experience homophobia directly can become an ally to LGBTQ people. So in this sense, all adults, even those of us who are so privileged that climate change just means more spring days, can be allies to the children. Our future will be their present. And the world that we create will be the one in which they inescapably live. So I want to invite all of us on this Earth Day weekend in 2017, in this moment of political upheaval and rapid change of all kinds, to pause for a moment and consider how we can each best serve as allies to the children. It's going to be different for each of us, depending on the unique gifts that we bring. Some of us are fighters, and we want to resist and stand in the way of bulldozers building pipelines. Some of us are builders and want to work on technological and community-based solutions, more solar, more rooftop farming, more making running shoes out of plastic that they find in the ocean. Some of us are intellectuals and artists and want to write and paint and use drama and film to light a new vision for the future. Some of us are marchers and want to make the protest loud and visible, to shake the world's soul into awareness of the crisis, and to shout, "There is a child on the tracks!" The People's Climate March in DC this coming Saturday is one step in this direction. But this march, or any march, is not an end in itself. It's a tactic. And the strategy is movement building and culture change. Building a movement and changing the culture is something that we all can do. We can all learn to consider in every decision the impact of our actions, not only on the children, but on the next seven generations. We can all become allies to the children and allow our hearts to carry us where our brains cannot. So that when my children or any children come to us adults and ask, "What do we have to protect ourselves? We don't have a shell, and we can't run that fast, and we can't fly, and our arms and legs won't grow back. What do we have to protect ourselves?" We can say with integrity and conviction, "You have us." We're going to have a really special opportunity right now to actually say this to some of the children in our community. I want to invite the children to come up to the front again, and I want to invite you adults, as you're comfortable, to rise and form a physical chain of connection. You can rise now, and you can put your hand, if you're comfortable, on the shoulder of the person in front of you. We're going to all get physically connected here. Oh my goodness, so many children. And the people in the front will reach out in loving touch to the children. This is a version of the laying on of hands, and we're all going to make a covenant together with these children. We're going to hear first from the children as they make some commitments, and then we will share our commitment with them, and our words are printed in the order of service. You can hold that in one hand.